This is Live and Local. It is your local performance connection. I'm Kevin Kelly. And on the show today, I'll be talking with organist Craig Kramer. He is professor at University of Notre Dame. He'll be coming to Champaign Sunday for a recital at 4 o'clock at the Chapel of St. John the Divine. I'll be talking with him later on in the program. First, though, I'll talk with Daniel Carberg, who is a professor at Millikan University in Decatur. They are putting on the opera The Coronation of Poppea. This comes from the Baroque era. Music mostly by Claudio Monteverdi. We'll find out what that means as we talk to Dan coming up very shortly. The production is being given today at 6 o'clock on the Millikan campus and then on Saturday as well with a 4 o'clock performance. And best of all, it's free. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. We just heard music by Claudio Monteverdi. It was played by violinist Joshua Bell with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, led by Michael Stern. Joshua Bell, by the way, has taken over that orchestra as the conductor. And that was called Pur ti miro, and it comes from an opera called The Coronation of Poppea. And I guess I say that music was by Monteverdi, and we'll find out if that was really true or not. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Daniel Carberg, who is a professor at Millikan University. He is a tenor, and he's also the music director for the production that they are doing of that opera. And Dan, yes. Thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome, Kevin. Nice to talk with you.
By Monteverdi or not by Monteverdi?
Oh, well, it's still up for debate, but the general consensus now is that final duet, Pur ti miro, which is probably the most famous piece from Poppea, is actually by Benedetto Ferrari. And so
he's the guy that made the cars?
I don't think so. I don't think they had cars back then. But so we call this a bit of a pastiche opera because it's actually not just by one composer.
But there is some music that is certifiably Monteverdi?
Yes, we think most of the rest of the work is by Monteverdi.
How do you find this stuff out?
Oh, treatises and sometimes musicologists will examine other works and they'll say, oh, well, this piece actually existed in a work by Ferrari before Monteverdi actually published Poppea.
Meaning that Monteverdi stole it?
Stole, borrowed... what happened was this production would travel to different cities, and so if it didn't have a happy ending, perhaps that particular city would want a happy ending to the opera, and so a composer might attach a piece onto the end of the opera to kind of switch the feel so it wouldn't be tragic.
And is that what happened in the case of Poppea?
It makes it more of a particularly loving ending to the opera. And what we know in real life, and this actually isn't covered in the opera, but Nero ends up kicking Poppea to death after this all happens. So it's actually really good foreshadowing for for what's going to happen afterwards.
Okay, well, now that you've mentioned Nero, you better tell the story because it already sounds intriguing.
It's filled with lust and fame and rise to power and all sorts of what we think of as kind of evil things. So Emperor Nero has taken a fancy to his mistress Poppea and is leaving his wife Ottavia. And Poppea is, in some productions she's in love with Nero, and some she's not. She just really wants this power. And so she'll do anything to get it. So she betrays a former lover, and she also has an assistant, Arnalta, who's kind of a flamboyant man. In our production, he eats a lot of potato chips, and he wears clothes that are a little too small for him, but he doesn't seem to think so. Nero has his spiritual advisor, Seneca, and so in our production, he's kind of a Tai Chi instructor, and he's the wise philosopher who eventually is ordered to commit suicide because he disagrees with Nero on something. And so there are actually two pairs of lovers in this, Poppaea and Nerone, and Ottone and Drusilla. And in our production, Nero is played by a woman, and Ottone is also played by a woman. So we have two sets of female lovers in this production, and there's a bit of physicality and some kissing, and so it's rather racy, I would say.
Sounds like you're trying to tug some strings of some kind or another.
Well, I think a lot of the productions are geared this way. For instance, the final duet, the parts, in my opinion, just work so much better because there's a lot of crunches if the voices are in the same register, rather than having a man play Nerone, where the crunches they're not quite as effective.
What do you mean by crunches?
We have a lot of half-step crunches and suspensions that really kind of symbolize the love and the intense feelings that they're having. And
so
it just doesn't quite work well as well musically, in my opinion, with a man and a woman.
So it's musical dissonance where the notes are really close together and they clash and
exactly,
make
yes.
a slightly harsh sound.
I yes.
So the since you have the option to have a man or a woman, is that because the vocal range calls for it?
It's really a musical or directorial choice, because you can take those parts down an octave. But traditionally, it's done either way. It's really just a choice of what you want for vocal colors and physical characters. Ottone, who's played by we have a woman playing this, but it's often played by a countertenor and kept in the same register. We just happen to have a really good low mezzo who can do this.
So you know, most operas will say that such and such a role is for tenor, and such is for bass.
Right.
Did Monteverdi not indicate that for Nero?
We know from the records that from the performances that it was done by two women.
So obviously that wasn't the sort of rule of Shakespeare's day when women didn't play on the stage at
right.
all didn't apply in Monteverdi's day, at least in opera.
No, women were widely employed, and this was in Venice, 1643. It became more and more, as opera got later, that women kind of got pushed out of things, I think.
Let's hear another aria from here. I'll give you your choice here. I've got two recordings that we thought we'd play, and I'm not sure which will be the most appropriate for the midpoint or which the end. Addio Roma or Oblivion Suave?
Oh, let's do Oblivion Suave.
How does that figure in the plot here?
This is Poppaea is just about to fall asleep. She's been so excited about all the things that are about to happen that she needs a nap, and her assistant Arnalta is singing her to sleep, basically. And so this is her Arnalta singing Poppaea to sleep.
And
right before the attempted murder is about to happen.
Oh, so yeah, this is full of drama.
Yeah, it is.
Of course,
yeah.
Typical opera.
Yes.
Here's Don Upshaw to sing this music, Oblivion Suave, from The Coronation of Poppaea, which will be at Millikan University.
Yes.
Very shortly. It opens
yes.
tonight.
It opens tonight at 6 o'clock in Kuiper Hall, and then Saturday at 4 o'clock, also in Kuiper Hall. Admission is free.
That's even better.
Yes, so doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, so to see an opera for free.
Right, right.
Wow, that only happens on TV every
exactly.
once in a while. All right, Dan Carberg's music director from Millikan, and here's Don Upshaw. We heard Don Upshaw singing music from the opera The Coronation of Poppaea. I was going to say music by Monteverdi called Oblivion Suave. Is that one of those that is likely by him or likely
yes.
by somebody else?
Yeah, we believe that's by Monteverdi.
What's the significance of this opera, historically speaking?
Some of the first, this is one of the, well, the first operas were around the early 1600s by Monteverdi and Peri and Caccini. And then this is kind of the next stage where opera moved to Venice, and we have an official opera house and an official opera series. And this is one of the earlier operas in that particular opera series. And also the size of the orchestra started to diminish. So in Orfeo, in the early 1600s, we had quite a large orchestra. And then this is very, very small, and it's really about the singers. And the instrumental parts are really just ritornelli in between the vocal components.
And Wikipedia says this is one of the first operas to use historical events and people?
Yes, this is one of the first historic operas. So it's really recreating something that actually happened, rather than having mythological characters.
Yeah. Now, you indicated just a bit ago in describing, you know, people eating potato chips and being Tai Chi instructors.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you haven't quite set this historically?
No, we have not set it historically. It's, you know, often set in Rome. Recent productions have set it in places such as Las Vegas, where there's kind of that element of corruption. This production is set in Los Angeles, and so we have Nero's kind of a fitness buff, and yeah, he has his Tai Chi instructor, and Poppea is kind of the prom queen, and Ottone is a singer-songwriter, and I don't think it takes any integrity away from the production. It works perfectly with the music, and that was our number one goal, was to make sure that the music was well represented, and it really, really works well for this setting.
So whose idea was that?
This was Matthew Lees, is the stage director, and this was his conception.
Since you said this sort of thing has been done other times with his operas, is there something about this one that lends itself to the bending of the facts, so to speak?
Yeah, I think this idea of this story of someone wanting to rise to power and willing to step on anyone along the way, this kind of exists all over the place. So it's pretty easy to find settings where this idea can work.
Has anybody said it in Washington, D.C., I wonder?
I bet they have. In fact, that sounds quite familiar to me.
that's called the news. Idea. That's called the news. That's why it sounds familiar. Well, Dan, it sounds like a great opportunity for people to go hear an historical opera in a new setting. And for free.
And I should mention too that we're doing this in Italian, so it's L'Incoronazione di Poppea, and so we have English super titles. And also, it's a rather small theater, so if you want to get a good seat, you should show up a little early.
Well, I guess if it's free, does that mean there are no tickets, or do you need a ticket?
There are no tickets. Nope.
Oh, so you really do have to show up.
Yes, you do.
And cross your fingers.
Yes.
Well, I hope you have a sellout, so to speak.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It sounds like we should be expecting good crowds.
Let's go out with another aria from L'Incoronazione di Poppea, or The Coronation of Poppea, mostly by Monteverdi.
Yes.
This is Addio Roma, and is this a Monteverdian concoction?
Yes, this is definitely a Monteverdian concoction. This is Ottavia, who was the Empress of Rome, and she has been banished because she was the one who orchestrated the attempted murder on Poppea. And so she has been banished from her kingdom, and this is her saying goodbye.
And we're going to hear in the role Anna Sophie von Otter.
Excellent.
Performing music of Monteverdi here on Live and Local. Dan Carberg is the stage director and professor at Millikan, and appreciate very much your joining us.
Thank you very much.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Mezzo-soprano Anna Sophie von Otter. Addio Roma from The Coronation of Poppea. mostly by Claudio Monteverdi. It'll be performed at Millikan University tonight at 6 o'clock in Kuiper Hall, and a repeat performance on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. You're listening to Live and Local. Our program is made possible with support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. We also have support from Eastern Rug Gallery, offering over 1,000 contemporary and traditional guaranteed hand-knotted rugs made of pure wool or silk pile, from contemporary to traditional. Eastern Rug Gallery also offers a cleaning and repair service. Eastern Rug Gallery, 1402 South Neal Street in Champaign. On October 20th at 7 a.m., our fall pledge drive begins with a power hour. You can help make this a success with a contribution of $25, $50, or $75. Now, to the Member Match Fund. We'll use your gift to challenge others to give. You can also make your gift online at willpledge.org, and you can help fuel the service that brings you in-depth news coverage and provocative music and performance all year long, including, of course, Live and Local, your local performance connection. My next guest on the show is going to be Craig Kramer. I'm getting my doctors mixed up, who is a professor at University of Notre Dame. He's going to be playing this Sunday in Champaign. That's a portion of the Prelude in E Major by Dietrich Buxtehude in a performance by Dr. Craig Kramer, who's professor of organ at the University of Notre Dame. He'll be opening his recital this coming Sunday in Champaign with a prelude in D by Buxtehude, and is going to be at the Episcopal Chapel of St. John the Divine starting at 4 o'clock. Dr. Kramer is with me right now from Notre Dame. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks.
And how did you get hooked up on this particular recital here? Are you friends with the Buzards, or did they find you, or they just knew of you, or what happened here?
Keith Williams was my original contact. He is an employee of the Buzard Organ Company, and they had a committee meeting of some people in your area who sponsor organ concerts and very kindly invited me. And I said, of course I will get to play a Buzard organ, correct? And I actually think they had another venue in mind, but I said, wow, it would be a shame to come to Champaign, home of the Buzard Organ Company, and not play one of your instruments. So it worked out that I could play at St. John the Divine, and I'm very excited, of course.
Isn't that, if I might be remembering wrong, but isn't that the one that John calls his Opus 1?
I think it is. I have never been in that particular church or chapel, so I don't know, but I know it is an early instrument on his opus list, yes.
Yeah, it's a big organ in a relatively small space, although a bigger space than it used to be since they've expanded that church in the last couple of years, which is very nice. What is the significance of why is it so important what organ you play on? I mean, that may sound like a naive question, but I'm willing to bet that a lot of people might not know the answer, and I'm not sure I know the complete answer.
All organs are different. They're constructed in different ways, and they have a different number of stops. The colors of the instrument are in the stops, of course, and so you might have more principal stops and less reed stops, or more flute stops and less string stops. And then there's the question of what music, what literature is appropriate to a particular instrument. So that's the fun of it. I get to go around and play wonderful instruments in different styles, try to figure out what music will empathize with that particular instrument. And then I get to come and practice, enjoy the instrument, and more or less orchestrate the pieces on that particular instrument, depending on what stops I want to use. It's great fun.
For our listeners, just to clarify this use of the term stop. I mean, actually, when people use the phrase, he pulled out all the stops, you probably don't know, many people probably don't realize it is a reference to organ playing. But those are the little pull levers or push levers that you change the sound of the organ in particular specific sounds.
That's correct, and the number of stops varies from organ to organ. The least number of stops you can have is one. The largest organs in the world in European cathedrals and in several venues in the United States can have 200 stops. So the more stops, the greater the variety, the more ways you can combine stops and coax different sounds out of the instrument.
Why are they called stops?
That is such an interesting history. Originally, organs had no stops, so when you pumped them, this was, of course, in the Gothic period, in medieval times, you pumped the organ, put wind through the pipes, and you played full organ all the time. And someone said, wow, this is not very practical. What if we went to play a wedding and we need softer stops? I don't know if they said weddings, of course. That's my own take on the situation. And they said, why don't we stop off some of these pipes, and then we can control them with these knobs, which we then call stops, and we can put them on or off at will. So the organ can be loud, it can be medium, it can be soft, and the term was invented. Now, of course, we are stuck with this very interesting language, please put a stop on. It doesn't really make sense unless you're an organist and know the history.
Well, I never did know that. So now I'm glad to know it. And in reference to the piece we just played by Buxtehude, I understand, as you were telling me before we actually started recording this conversation, that you're embarking on a performance of all the works of Buxtehude?
That's correct. In the year 2007, organists all over the world, musicians all over the world, celebrated Buxtehude's anniversary. He died in 1707, and so many organists played the complete works of Buxtehude, which is about 90 pieces for the organ. And I did that series here at Notre Dame, and it was great fun. And a former student of mine is the organist of the Roman Catholic Cathedral in Columbus, Ohio, where they have a magnificent Baroque-style organ. And he invited me to repeat the series in Columbus this year, so I'm very honored to do that. And the first concert is in the middle of October. And so I thought, okay, I'm enjoying reviving these Buxtehude pieces, and the folks in Champaign indicated they wanted the first half of the program to be Baroque music. And so I programmed the D major of Buxtehude.
And then you have music by Georg Böhm, which I don't actually have here represented with the recording. And then, of course, Johann Sebastian Bach. Has anybody ever tried to play all of the organ works of Bach?
I have performed the complete works of Bach.
Have you really?
Yes, it took me 18 concerts spread over about 2.5 years. There are many organists in this country who have done this series. Some of them are, I suppose, a lot more energetic than I and knock all of them out in 1 year, which is quite a feat. There are more than 200 pieces, 220 pieces, I think. Interesting about the program, you were speaking about Böhm. This is the Böhm anniversary year. He was born 1661. And both of these gentlemen, Buxtehude and Böhm, were teachers of J.S. Bach.
And so that's a pretty good way of programming these things, leading up. And Buxtehude the elder, and then Böhm coming in next, and then Bach about 20 years later. The piece you're going to play, Passacaglia and Fugue theme, I guess that's what that means, in C minor. We've got lots of recordings of that, and I'm not sure I've heard it, although I may recognize it when we play it in a few minutes, or play part of it.
It's one of the masterpieces of the organ literature. It is probably the most complicated ostinato bass piece in the organ literature. An ostinato is a bass tune that is repeated over and over, and so you hear it 21 times in the Passacaglia, which means it's really a set of variations upon this melody that keeps going on and on in the pedal. And then he used the first half of that melody as the fugue subject. So then he builds an entire fugue on that theme. It's a very powerful piece, very complex, but thrilling in the end.
Complex, does that mean especially difficult for the organist?
Yes, it has its thorny moments. It's technically a tour de force as well in many places, because Bach was so ingenious with the counterpoint, how all of the voices interplay. You always have to be very careful to be giving equal attention to all of the voices. And in this particular piece, there is one variation that has only one voice sounding at a time, and then there are variations with large chords that have six notes in them. So it goes from the very thin texture to very thick and very complex counterpoint.
Well, I think we'll hear a performance of some of this Passacaglia and Fugue by Bach. This is a performance by Marie-Claire Alain, and we're going to sneak into it a little bit right at the end of the Passacaglia and as we get into the Fugue, so that you can hear a little bit about what Mr. Kramer was talking about here. Craig Kramer is my guest here on Live and Local. He's going to be performing at the Chapel of St. John the Divine in Champaign this coming Sunday afternoon, starting at 4 o'clock. And we heard the end of the Passacaglia and the Fugue from the piece virtually of that name, Passacaglia and Fugue Theme, it's called, in C minor, by Bach. Marie-Claire Alain performing that here on Live and Local. And you can hear the complete work played by Craig Kramer Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock in Champaign. He's with me on the phone right now from Notre Dame. Right? You're on sabbatical this semester.
I am on sabbatical all year, as a matter of fact, and I am enjoying practicing and playing a lot of concerts.
Is that when a performer, a performing professor, takes a sabbatical, is that usually what you end up doing, is a lot of extra performing?
Yes, I have three large projects. The first is performing a lot of concerts so I can learn new music, perfect old music, for instance, the Buxtehude series. The second is to prepare music for some recordings that I'll be doing in Europe, I hope, next summer. And then the third is to plan an organ study tour for my students, which will take place next May and into June. We will go to Europe, probably the Northern Netherlands and North Germany, to play historic organs.
You, in your bio, you actually list a number of organs in the Netherlands that you have played. Is there something particularly special, generally speaking, about organs in the Netherlands?
Yes, they had some of the finest organ builders in history. The greatest organ builder in the north of Europe lived and worked in and around Hamburg in Germany, but he also had a workshop in the Netherlands, and he had three workshops, actually, a very large crew. His name was Schnitger, and he occupies a place in organ building history that would be analogous to that of Stradivarius in the violin making world. So we go and study these instruments, play them, listen to them, crawl through them, and the students and I learn so much about how the music should be performed. The music comes alive on these antique instruments.
Literally crawl through the organs? What is? How do you do that?
It's fantastic. I have a colleague who's an organ builder. He's the curator of organs at Oberlin Conservatory in Ohio. And he goes with us and opens up the doors, and the students walk through the instruments, and he explains that makes this instrument particularly Dutch, or this is something that would only have been seen in the 17th century, or the musical result of it doing it this way is so-and-so. And it is an invaluable experience.
So, in other words, you're actually crawling behind the pipes, the visible pipes that people will see.
That's right. We climb up ladders and climb all through the instruments. It's just thrilling. It's really fun. It would be like if you could shrink yourself, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and crawl around inside of a Stradivarius. It's really an extraordinary experience.
Yeah, I actually have done it in a couple of places, the church where I'm the choir master, and that's a pretty relatively small organ, I think. And it is fascinating, and some of these spaces can be extremely tight, too.
Oh, yes. I don't know too many organ builders who aren't adept at squeezing themselves into small spaces. It's a special art.
So does that imply that there aren't too many really large organ builders?
I don't know if I would go that far, but they find ways to tune. They have their creative methods. I have seen them lying on their backs and tuning, and I have seen them use little step stools and put their hands on it and lean way over. It's really interesting. It's physically very demanding, of course, to do that.
You said that among the things you'll be doing on your sabbatical is learning some new music. The second half of this recital has one composer whose name is at least new to me, but I also wonder whether any of the program pieces in the second half happen to be relatively new to you, or are these all veteran pieces for you, so to speak?
These are all veteran pieces for me, mainly because this is what will work on this instrument, and I'm spending so much time relearning Buxtehude at the moment that I want to fall back on my old reliables, as it were.
And one of them by Kenneth Layton, who is a composer of a lot of organ and choral music, English composer, is Festival Fanfare. And then this is the person that I don't think I've heard of myself, named Ethel Smythe. Is she also an English composer?
She was an English composer, very prolific. She was a woman who took a great leadership role in the women's suffrage movement in England. She was famous in England in the first part of the 20th century. She always wanted to study composition and was forbidden to do so by her parents, who thought it was not proper for a young English woman to be studying in Europe to learn her craft. And finally, she just said, no, I'm going to go and study. And she went to Europe and studied composition, and she got to know the great musical luminaries of the day. She knew Tchaikovsky and Grieg and Clara Schumann. And above all, she was friends with Johannes Brahms, who advised her on musical matters, and it was he, apparently, who, upon learning that she wanted to compose for the organ, said, "That's a wonderful idea, but first, please, you must learn the great organ works of Bach." The result of her interest in the organ was five chorale preludes, of which I will play the fifth. It's really hauntingly beautiful and very, very much in the style of Brahms's organ music, which, as you may know, are among the last pieces that he composed. Really extraordinary composer. She wrote six oratorios and six operas and chamber music and a piano concerto and piano music. Really very fine stuff. And of course, as with so many neglected composers, she deserves to be heard more.
Well, let's at least introduce this piece for our listeners. It's a prelude and fugue on O Traurigkeit, O Herzeleid, which is O Sadness, O Bitter Pain, by Ethel Smyth. This is a performance by Krista Rakic. Do you know this?
That's right, Krista Rakic.
Did I say it right? Okay, great. And you can hear this piece played on Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock in Champaign by my guest on Live and Local, Craig Kramer. That was music by Ethel Smyth, her prelude and fugue on O Traurigkeit, O Herzeleid, and a performance by Krista Rakic. And Dr. Craig Kramer will perform it at the Chapel of St. John the Divine in Champaign, Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. He's my guest on this portion of Live and Local. And Craig, you said at the beginning, or at least earlier on, that you haven't been in this church, so you didn't really know the organ. But then just a bit ago, you said that you picked the program to make sure the pieces would work on that organ. How do you get an advance look at the organ without having played it?
I've cheated a bit here. First of all, the stop list for the organ is online, and so I can look at that and get a feel for what the instrument will do. But the way I've cheated is I know Mr. Buzard's organ in First United Methodist Church in Normal, Illinois, because my late wife's parents live in Normal. And so when I used to visit there frequently, and when I still do visit them, often I would go to First United Methodist Church to practice. And so I have a very good sense of Buzard organs from having spent so much time with that instrument.
Well, that doesn't sound like cheating to me. That sounds like research.
Good. It's a better word.
Well, it's been great to talk to you, and best of luck with the recital and with your upcoming Buxtehude tour, I guess.
Thank you very much. It's been really great to be with you.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. And here is Craig Kramer playing the Fritz organ at his institution, the University of Notre Dame. And it's a fugue in C major by Dietrich Buxtehude.
Thank you.
organist Craig Kramer and music of Dietrich Buxtehude. And he'll open with some music by Buxtehude on Sunday afternoon's concert at the Chapel of St. John the Divine in Champaign. That starts at 4 o'clock. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And here are some other events you can go out and see and hear live in our listening area. Tonight at 8 o'clock on the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, it's the ISU Symphony Orchestra giving a concert called Viva España in the Center for the Performing Arts on the campus. It's Deer Camp, the musical, at the Effingham Performance Center. That's tonight at 7:30. The Merchant of Venice is at ISU as well, and Westhoff Theater. That is tonight at 7:30 and runs through Saturday at the same time. The University of Illinois Wind Symphony performs tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. The Larry Harms Trio plays jazz at Basta O'Neill's in Washington, Illinois. That's this evening at 6 o'clock. Tomorrow, Don't Ask, a klezmer ensemble will perform at Bouvans in Urbana at 6 in the evening. The ISU Jazz Ensembles 1 and 2 will perform at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. At the Hoagland Center in Springfield, it's the musical Ragtime, Friday at 7:30 and Saturday at 7:30. There's a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. The Illinois Wesleyan University Wind Ensemble performs on the Wesleyan campus at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts, Friday night at 7:30. It's Scrap Arts Music at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield, 7:30 Friday evening. You can check out their website to find out what that's all about. Tennessee at 100 is a series of one-act plays by Tennessee Williams being given at Parkland College Theater in two different sets. Set B is happening Friday night. You can check their website for the complete schedule. And the Eastern Illinois University Wind Symphony and Jazz Ensemble give a concert called Life in the Groove, The Influence of Jazz, in Dvorak Concert Hall on the Eastern Campus in Charleston. That's tomorrow night at 7:30. And the Interim Director of Bands will be my guest on tomorrow's show. I'll also be talking with iconic folk singer Bill Staines on tomorrow's show. He's going to be performing in Peoria this weekend, Sunday night at Forest Park Nature Center, 7 o'clock show. And so looking forward to a chat with him tomorrow. You're listening to 90.9 WYNL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR and Classical Music for Central Illinois. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. And we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. It'll be a mostly sunny and windy afternoon. The projected high has been bumped up to around 82 degrees. We're currently at 78.